Don't get fooled again. We've got a very important video podcast for you today, and that song is actually an ode to the recent election because, boy, do Americans love getting fooled every 2 years. And actually, I saw a meme the other day. It was from The Onion that said, American voters are eager to vote themselves on a different wrong track, and I think that really spoke to me. Probably speaks to a lot of you guys today, but we were going to talk today about several key data points going on with the economy. I've got both of the stock and bond markets. I've got about 25 articles I'm going to tear through, and I know you'll find this informative. As if you do find this informative, please go on iTunes, rate us 5 stars. If you really want to be awesome, you can actually write in a little comment in there as well. I don't think I've asked for that before, or maybe once or twice, but be the first person to do it. Somebody like Peter Schiff is working on 2,000 different ratings. You can be like, hey, I was Tim Pichot. I was his first review or the first ranking, and I'd really appreciate that. But ultimately, it is to help expand the reach because this is not common knowledge. If we want to have a world where our kids and grandkids have a better chance at coming out of this, better than we are on the other end, then we've got to be able to save ourselves, and so that way our neighbors, so that way we've got a better future. But anyways, without further ado, we're going to get into the podcast. Today it is November 9th, 2018, and this is episode 39. And a lot has gone on since the last time we have recorded a podcast. It's been about 2 weeks, but today I want to start with a little analogy as it relates to the economy. A lot of you who know me know that a big passion of mine, in addition to triathlon, a big part of the triathlon is cycling. It happens to be my favorite part of the triathlon. But there is an app that is called Strava. And what it does is it records who has the fastest time on a certain segment of the road. And this isn't a triathlon podcast, so I'm not going to get into all the details. But anyways, if I'm on a certain stretch of road, I can see how I stack up compared to everybody else. And so there are a lot of good cyclists in the greater Phoenix area. And there's a lot of different segments, as they call it, that are very hard to get. And where I'm going with this is if you've got the wind going, you've got a nice tailwind, let's say it's a 30-mile-an-hour tailwind, which can be kind of dangerous, especially with aero wheels. You don't have to be the fastest cyclist in the world to be able to maybe get one of these segments if you have all the right conditions. Maybe you've got the right maybe people around you. Maybe you're getting some sort of draft, which is somewhat highly looked down upon. But what happens is if you end up getting, let's say, a major headwind, where all of a sudden now instead of having 30 miles an hour wind that's at your back, now it's actually in your face. I don't really care if you're, maybe unless you're Lance Armstrong on the juice and you've got all the incredible endurance that he has, maybe you can pull it off. But I still don't think so. There's still the talent that's out here is still good enough where that's not going to happen. So if you're trying to go for one of these Strava segments and all of a sudden the wind's 30 miles in at your face, I don't care how many things go well. I don't care how long you've been training. I don't care, really, I don't care about anything. Odds are you're not going to be able to break one of these segments. I've got one segment that is pretty coveted that's been tried out probably about 4,000 or 5,000 times. It's held up for about 3 years. I had a nice wind at my back. I was pretty highly trained at the time, but that has stood the test of time. And if somebody goes out and beats that tomorrow and all of a sudden, the wind is not at my back, odds are I'm not going to be able to beat that. So I'll just wait to another day. And so where I'm going with the economy when it comes to all this stuff is right now, if you guys take a look at the screen, I show central bank asset purchases over the past, basically going back to 2008. So it looks over the past 10 years and also looks forward over the next 2 years. And what do you see is that right now we're going to a point where we're going to be very close to actually being basically neutral or potentially even have negative asset sales as it relates to all the different government bonds. And so that is a major, major headwind. And as one of my favorite financial economists, Peter Schiff, said, it's like, if you have a table and you've got that old magic trick where you take, you take the tablecloth and you yank it out and then you try seeing if the plates and glasses are still standing. Well, what the Fed's trying to do with this whole charade is they're trying to yank the table out and hope all the glasses and everything stays still. And that is exactly what's going on. And so now you take a look at some of these other articles here, and we've got a record number of assets are down for the year. Now this was on the first of the month. So, granted it's been 8 days, but if you take a look at it right now, and I'm trying to find the exact number, and there's actually I believe it's 89%. Here we go. So 89% of assets that Deutsche Bank collects data on its long-term annual study had a negative total return to date in dollar terms. And why that's particularly kind of crazy, and I'm not looking at any notes as I'm doing this. I just have a bunch of screens pulled up, and actually probably way too many screens pulled up. I've got like about 30 different screens that I've been accumulating over the past 2 weeks because I've had a lot going on the past couple weeks. Was at World CryptoCon last week. I had a great time there and made a lot of good contacts. And I'll have a special Bitcoin related podcast later where we get into that. But interestingly enough, Bitcoin has actually been less volatile the past 2 months than the S&P 500. But why this is crazy is usually what happens is when stocks are down, usually bonds are up or vice versa. But with this headwind going on where we're printing all this money, or sorry, where we're basically spending all this money and we're not printing money, it means that the market now is going to be the ones who are forced to basically dictate the interest rates and not even so much the Federal Reserve. So right now we're looking at a chart that shows all of these different assets that they track, or some of the assets that they track, and shows you know that things are really not going well. And the only other two times this many asset classes have been down were the 70s during stagflation, and then the global financial crisis. But even during the global financial crisis, bonds at the time, I think you could be in relatively safe bonds paying like 6%. Then the rates were going down. Well, now I mean we've only been able to get the rates up just barely, and just look at what everything that has happened to the market so far. Now we're also taking a look at the an article entitled "The Next Big Market Risk: Here Comes a Sharp Slowdown in Stock Buybacks." And if you take a look at this chart, I mean, there's definitely some outliers here. You see, going back to the early 2000s, you see in between 2005 and 2006, there was a major repatriation of overseas earnings. And so everybody was really bullish during the George Bush years of saying, hey, look at this, this is great. And the market was booming. And then, those steroids went away. And then, pretty much flatlined for the next 13 years up until the past year or so, when we had a record amount of repatriation that was used to buy back stocks the first quarter of this year. And then even right now, I mean, it's going very, very strong as well. So they're definitely outliers. But, there's only so much capital that you can bring home, because if you have a major, tax holiday and you bring all your money back, well, then the next year you're not going to have nearly as much money to bring back if you already brought back all your money. So that's one important thing that I think a lot of people are discounting. You've got the Federal Reserve has shrunk its balance sheet by the most since they started QT, which is the unofficial name, but quantitative tightening. That's something that I talked about in the very, very beginning, that I was calling it, well, if you have QE, which is quantitative easing, and the whole point of that was to raise asset prices, and now you do the exact opposite, then, I don't think I have to connect the dots in too many places to think if you do the opposite of something, then it should probably have the opposite effect. And that opposite effect would mean asset prices going down. And then you have certain companies that have different blackout periods. And so that's, leading to sort of what was going on, the past month. So another big narrative that's out there is, well, a lot of the reason why these big retailers are, well, the big reason that a lot of them are down is because you have these behemoths like Amazon who, they're taking the market share over everything. And Amazon is just, absolutely killing it. It's sort of the popular opinion that's out there. But if you really take a look at Amazon, and actually here's an article from a few days ago, it looks like this was October 27th, so maybe about a week and a half ago, and it's Amazon misses on earnings and stock is down 5%. So we've seen Amazon since, two podcasts ago, when I was talking about it, it was damn near $2,000, and now I think it's closer to $1,400. And then the other big darling of the market was Apple. And so people are like, oh, well, everyone's going to Amazon and Apple. And so, Apple had to they missed their earnings on revenue outlook growth. And of course, you got, Jim Cramer, who, this guy is just about wrong at everything. But one of the things that he talked about, and so I'm going to click off all these screens right now, but one of the things he did talk about that I just happened to catch this headline right as I was making this, and it looks like this is from yesterday, and it's called Bad News is Good News, Cramer's Mad Money Recap. And it's funny because the entire premise of the very first podcast I made post Donald Trump's election was actually, it was the first financial one, specific one that I made, a presentation that I did was called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. And the whole premise was that all the good news would be that the Fed would not now have the cover to not raise rates, which would lead to them you know, having to raise rates, which would help pop the bubble, which that would lead to the bad news. So it's good news was bad news, and now it's bad news is good news. Although the I don't know where Cramer is really getting this from, because just the other day the Fed came out and said they're not going to let the market action sort of dictate their rate hikes, and it looks like they are going to continue with a December rate hike. So we were just talking about the stock market. Now we're going to get more into the bond market. So we've got an article from just 3 days ago on the 5th, I guess it's 4 days ago, Treasury to sell record debt this week with yields on verge of breakout. And so, you know, if things are going so good, then why do we need to sell a record amount of debt? I mean, it's almost like, you know, it's like you're talking to your friend, and then your friend goes on and says, you know, hey, you know, how's it going, Bob? And Bob's like, well, you know, I just, you know, sold, you know, had to, you know, refinance my house, and I had to, you know, take out three more lines of credit, and I had to, you know, take out another credit card, and I balance transferred from this card to that card. You'd probably say, hey, things aren't going well. But if you had another friend who, you're like, hey, Joe, what's going on? And he's like, hey, you know, I just paid off all this, and I paid off that, and I have no more debt, and I'm actually saving all this money for a rainy day. You'd say, wow, you know, Joe really has it going on. But according to the government, you know, I guess they really don't care about any of these statistics. And so that's one thing. We've got mortgage applications plummet to 18-year lows as rates hit 2010 highs. And that's with, you know, because ultimately, you know, what realtors sell is they sell a payment. And so, you know, you're out there and, you know, you say, hey, you know, I'm paying $1,200 a month for my rent, and I can get in this house for $1,100, and maybe it's, you know, twice the size of what I'm renting for. And so that's all people are thinking about. But now that the biggest factor in the price of your rental payment, well, besides the price of the house, is going to be the interest rate. And now that the interest rates have actually skyrocketed, relatively speaking, that's a major, major headwind that's going on. You also see that mortgage bonds suffer worst month in 2 years as the Federal Reserve pulls out. And then you've got another one article saying that Americans are now trapped in their homes for the longest period ever. And again, I'm not doing this with any notes right now, but it looks like just like the average tenure of homeowners staying in their homes is the longest it's been in quite some time. Actually, I guess for the longest period ever. So I'm not sure, you know, exactly when it goes back to, but you know, that again is not another great sign. You'd think that in a vibrant, booming economy that people would be, you know, re-upping their houses, you know, trading up for bigger homes. But with the negative headwinds in the form of interest rates, you know, that's a very hard thing to do. Now we're looking at bond traders shocked by dismal 30-year auction as direct bidder collapse continues. I guess in layman's terms here, there's, you know, very weak demand for these bonds, and which is then causing the interest rates to go up. And it's also, I didn't pull up the chart on this, but if you look at the LIBOR chart, which is almost even more important than the Fed's fund rate, I mean, I want to say that in US dollar terms, it's close to 2.5%. So I'm going to look this up on the fly as I'm talking to you. So LIBOR rate chart, and I probably should have typed in 2-year LIBOR chart. Actually, we've got 30-year right here, going back 30 years. So it looks like it's at 2.31. And so if you're actually taking a look at this, I mean, going back to, you know, 2011, the 1 month LIBOR was 0.19, 3 month 0.25, 6 month 0.4, 12 months 0.73. And now, I mean, you take a look at it, and of course I got my camera right in the way, but the 1 month is now 2.11, 3 month 2.32, six is 2.5, and I can't see the 12-year, but it's 2.8. So, you know, very little difference between all of those different spreads, but it's obviously a huge difference. I mean, you go from paying, you know, 0.2% interest to paying over 2% interest. That's a gigantic jump for anybody. Now, another thing that is happening is you have the VIX, which is the volatility index, which basically in layman's terms just means how much the stock market goes up and down, and people can bet on how much the stock market goes up and down. Not going to get into all how they calculate this, but you had almost a record amount of people going short the VIX, meaning that they thought that there was going to be less volatility. And now if you look at this chart, there's a tiny, tiny, tiny little speck where actually now it's net long, where people think that there's going to be more volatility, but it's just the tiniest, tiniest bit. But you see how you go from, you know, record short to now all of a sudden, you know, actual a tiny bit of long within just, you know, almost, you know, almost instantly. So just this just goes to show you, you know, how irrational the market can be in the short term and how basically not to trust what's going on. And there's another article entitled "What Happens When You Stomp the Gas, aka Spend More Money, and the Brake Simultaneously," which is cutting taxes. And it just shows, you know, the, you know, the government debt absolutely exploding. Now with the Democrats leading the House, I'll be honest, I was very surprised, not that the Democrats won the House, but I was very surprised that then the stock market went the next day, then went up 500 points. You know, I think a lot of times I can call this stuff. I thought way in advance that the Democrats were going to win. Said this all the way going back to 50 days into the Trump presidency, which, you know, for most people think, oh yeah, well, you know, that's obvious because, you know, most presidents, you know, that's what happens to the incumbent party. And they're absolutely right, except, you know, everyone that's so, you know, because it goes both ways with Trump. You've got some people that think he's to blame for everything and other people that, you know, think he's never to blame, that he's basically the next coming of Christ. And, you know, I'm somebody that voted for him, that I like a lot of the stuff he's doing, especially calling out the media, especially what he did the other day, calling out Jim Acosta. I'm sure all you have probably seen it where, I mean, can you imagine if that was going on under Obama, you know, all the calls for, you know, racism, all the calls for, you know, that, you know, it's got to be some sort of, you know, sexist, you know, homophobe, or, you know, whatever they want to, you know, any sort of, you know, epithet they want to throw out. It seems like what these people want to do. But when it comes to Donald Trump, it's like they have like a free pass to just do whatever the heck they want to him. And it's just very, you know, very disheartening, you know, sort of seeing that where, you know, yeah, Trump does say a lot of bombastic things. He said, especially with the economy, definitely exaggerates a lot. But, you know, there's just such a double standard going on, and that's what I think what the American people are just sick of, is just seeing this double standard that is going on, because it's blatantly obvious. And now with the Democrats in charge, I mean, do you think that the spending is going to be reined in now? I mean, the Republicans actually increased the deficit, and now, you know, there's so many different pet projects that the president wants to do that he doesn't necessarily want to pay for, you know, Space Force being chief amongst those. And then you've got the Democrats who want to have all this different spending. And so I think you're going to see this bipartisanship where the deficit's going to explode even more. And honestly, it could be a good thing from a political standpoint to have the good thing in terms of Republicans that they lost the House, because now what Trump can say is, hey, listen, you know, everything was rocking and rolling. We had the strongest economy ever, strongest stock market ever. I'm the absolute best ever. And then, you know, we elect the Democrats and all of a sudden things start going down. So if we are in a bear market by 2020, or, you know, assuming we're not already in one right now, because, you know, things are always going good before a bear market, and things, you know, are always at the highest right before things are going down. And you go back to 2008 and the likes of, you know, was it Ben Bernanke in 2008 or Greenspan? I believe it was Bernanke in 2008. You know, it was talking about how, you know, the subprime was contained and there was no real problems in 2008, talking about this while we were technically already in a recession. Same thing with all the teachers who were teaching me back in 2007, 2008, talking about how this stuff couldn't happen while we were actually in a recession. So this is why I don't trust any of them. But I also think that this is going to make the interest rate situation get even worse if the Fed does not step in. And I don't think they're going to be necessarily keen to step in to help the president, you know, given all the stuff that he's been saying about them and things that they've been saying about him and just how that whole dynamic as a whole has been going on. Now, what I want to direct your attention to now is we're looking at the Federal Reserve Economic Database, or FRED. It's the St. Louis Fed, and it's the total non-farm payrolls, aka, you know, the jobs, people working. And Trump, if you're looking at the screen, I mean, it's basically, you know, a perfect diagonal line going up. And, you know, right around the time Trump took it over, took things over, let's say 2017, January 2017. So let me find that date here. And so, you know, he wants to take credit for everything. But if you look at it, I mean, it's basically, you know, there's no major bump. There's no major anything. It's just, you know, a smooth line going straight up in a diagonal, basically at a 45 degree angle. And, you know, for people to be like, oh, you know, this was the worst economy, worst jobs president ever, but then now this is where things really took off. I mean, it's just very disingenuous. You can go to howitsrigged.com. I wrote a whole book mainly to dispel all the BS going on with Obama. Now I can use the same book to dispel some of the BS going on with Trump, even though when Trump was a candidate, he was basically acted like he had read the book. And now that, you know, he's part of the bully pulpit, I think he's wasting a valuable opportunity to actually educate people, because he's now going to get the blame unless he can then spin it to say, hey, I think we're going great. Because let's face it, the average person is not an economist. And also, let's face it, the average economist is probably knows even less about economics than the average person out there, because they study the wrong branch. They study Keynesian economics and not Austrian school economics. And so, you know, I'd almost say when people try saying, oh, well, this guy's an economic this or that, I mean, that means nothing to me. And, you know, I don't really show any deference to these people. And, you know, not to jump back, but I also don't show, you know, deference to, you know, these congressmen or even presidents. But, you know, there is a certain amount of respect when it comes to the president, that if you're Jim Acosta, that, you know, you've got to have some modicum of, you know, respect for that office, especially while you're a reporter who's there. And they want to make it look like, oh, this is a big free speech issue because, you know, they're taking away his hard pass. And now, you know, he has to go get a soft pass. So a hard pass lets you walk around anywhere on the White House grounds to basically get into the press briefing. And a soft pass is more like a day pass where you've got to basically be escorted by somebody. So, you know, this guy has shown time and time again he has no respect for the presidency, which is fine if you don't have respect for the presidency. But, you know, you've got to have some sort of, you know, you just can't go in there acting like it's Animal House, like it's all, you know, anything goes, while you've got the most, you know, in theory, one of the most powerful people in the world or right in front of you. So, you know, to me, you know, I like how Trump handled himself with all that, and did not like, I guess, how CNN handled that. Now, the next thing people use to say, to basically say that Trump is doing a great job, is talking about how we're winning the trade war with China. And, you know, I'm wondering what winning the trade war really means. Like, what metrics are you using? Because one would think that winning the trade war would actually mean that, I don't know, maybe the trade gap would lessen. And actually, the trade gap widened and actually went and actually rose to a record high in last month. So, I mean, I don't know what metrics these people use, but it's almost like, I forgot what they call it, like the Pygmalion effect, where if you just say it enough times, it eventually becomes true. And, you know, yeah, you can talk about how you're winning this or winning that, but who's actually paying the tariffs? It's the United States is paying the tariffs. The consumers are paying the tariffs, not the Chinese. And so, you know, if you take a look at from the Chinese perspective, you know, they're over here selling us a whole bunch of crap, but actual goods that are coming into the country, and we're giving them IOUs. And then we don't have the money to pay the IOUs, so we print up more money, and then we use that money to then pay back them the IOUs that we owed them, plus more IOUs. And so, you know, we're trading paper that's ultimately worth less and less and less, and to the point where eventually it might become worthless, while they're actually trading us real goods and have their citizens basically slaves. So, you know, I would say that if anyone's getting the raw end of the deal, it'd be the Chinese, who are giving us real stuff, and that took, you know, actual raw materials, labor, sweat equity, and we're giving them pieces of paper electronically. We don't even give them the paper, so they can't even wipe their butt with it. But now, you know, that's just one interesting way to think of it. And so if these tariffs do get raised to 25%, you know, that's going to be devastating across the board. I mean, all the issues that we've talked about, whether it's, you know, auto sales, whether it's home sales, all these are going to be negatively affected. I mean, basically the sales of everything, in my opinion, at that point would be negatively affected. But it's something that the market doesn't seem to care about at all. And I think a lot of people, now that the market did go up with the Democrats winning, seem like, oh, okay, well, yeah, it's back up now, so I can go back to sleep. Or a lot of people weren't even aware that the market is going down, or they weren't aware that, you know, this is, as it stands by a year, that this is actually the one of the worst years ever, or the worst year ever in terms of percentage of asset classes declining. And again, this is from 8 days ago, so maybe it's at like 87% instead of 89 now. I don't know the exact number today, but anyways, let's say it's 89. You know, at 89%, you know, what do you do? How do you protect yourself? Because normally what you do in a normal situation is maybe I might camp out a little bit in bonds. But what if all of a sudden central banks start printing a whole bunch of money and everything shoots up, and then you missed it? You know, I sold out of some of my Bitcoin around 2000 thinking, you know, that, hey, I needed money to start up crypto self-direct. I needed money to basically, I couldn't speculate with, and I thought there were some factors that it might go down. And ultimately, I thought that it was an asset class that was going to go up a lot, which is why I basically made the huge gamble to risk a six-figure job that I already had, or a career that I already had, to go off in this foray. But anyways, you know, by the you know, by the time, you know, people are waiting for it to go back down, well, it went from, you know, up to 20,000 and back down to six, but it was still 300% higher than when I decided to make that move. And so right now, you know, you've got to protect yourself and protect your purchasing power. And so we have a strategy where we're have our clients are 100% invested into the stock market. And we do have some gold, and, you know, we advise people obviously on cryptocurrencies as well. But when it comes to their stocks, we also have some downside protection in the form of put options. And those put options allow, when the market goes down, to basically counteract that. So if the market were to absolutely plummet, those put options would then soar in value to then counteract the market going down. So we use a small percentage of the portfolio to then hedge the rest of the portfolio. And in a year when you have 89% of assets are down, I'm not even sure what the 11% that are up, but for people that are, and I guess I could scroll into here, it's really small font to see what which ones are actually up, and it's very hard to see. It looks like wheat, corn, Brent crude, which might actually not be up anymore because I think they had a bad, definitely had a bad week. I've got the camera in the way, so I'm trying to look around it. Yeah, but I mean, almost everything across the board, some high yield bonds, it looks like, are up a tiny, tiny bit, which that may have even reversed as well. And so, you know, when you know, I was sort of almost like a year early on this, where I had seen all the BS, you know, accumulating, and had known that, you know, that the good news would ultimately lead to bad news. And that I think that people would have a chance to buy in actually lower than when Trump started the presidency. And that's not a statement that I think he's doing a bad job. I think he's doing an impossible job right now, that there's no way you could actually fix these things. And what we're trying to do is put a Band-Aid on the system when, you know, you've got cancer. And so the only way to get rid of cancer is to get the cancer out of you, not to put Band-Aids on cancer. But ultimately, nobody is smart enough to know how this is going to shake out. I'm not smart enough to know how this is going to shake out, but I do know there's some scenarios that could show the market absolutely skyrocketing, which is why you want to be in the market. And there's other scenarios where I could see the market plummeting, than the Fed or other central banks coming in to print more money or buy more assets, and then having that go shoot back up in value. And if you're close to retirement, you know, you can't really, you know, afford to screw around. You can't, you know, hey, I'm going to afford to wait 5 years for them to buy back, or for the asset prices to go back up, or I can't wait 10 years, or I maybe can't wait 2 years. Which for most people, they can't. Or, you know, maybe you camp out in cash, or you camp out in bonds, or camp out as a stable value fund, and all of a sudden now, you know, the stock market goes up 100% because we just printed a whole bunch of money. And that's what happens usually in big collapses, where when things really collapse, like a dollar collapse, not saying this is going to happen tomorrow or anything, but, and actually paradoxically, as this happens, it might actually, the dollar might actually strengthen, which is kind of a weird thought for most people to think of who are in this type of space, thinking how I think, is that they always think the dollar is going to collapse. But you look at guys like, I guess, like Harry Dent would probably be the most foremost prognosticator of this theory, where, you know, people are going to run to what they deem to be a safe asset, even if that asset isn't necessarily that safe. So in when I moved here in 2011, I think my first day of, like, on the job when I moved to Arizona was August 3rd, 2011, which is the same day that I believe it was Moody's or S&P, one of those rating agencies, downgraded the debt. And so if you knew in advance, let's say, that the debt was going to be downgraded, you had some sort of inside baseball, inside knowledge on that, you know, and let's say you were unethical and you're going to actually trade on that, you say, okay, well, now the government has less of a chance to pay us back. We're taking on a higher risk to assume those bonds. So now we demand a higher interest rate. Well, what happened is the interest rates actually went down and people flocked to that as safety. So who knows what's going to happen? That's what we've got, a strategy where it doesn't even matter. All the prognostication doesn't even matter. If the market's down a ton, our clients won't be, and then we get to buy back in at half off. If the market's up a ton, our clients will also be up a ton, especially a lot more than if they had half their money in bonds or 40% in bonds. But we also work and have diligent strategies with our clients where we know, okay, hey, you need another $50,000 a year to live off of in addition to your pension and Social Security. Let's find the safest way to get that, or, you know, use different strategies to get that income, but then also then use the rest of your money to have that grow to be able to protect your purchasing power, because things are going to get crazy. Nobody knows the timeline of any of this stuff. I thought it would have happened, you know, a few years ago. Donald Trump getting elected definitely sent us from like eighth, ninth inning into extra innings. Sometimes in extra innings is when things go up the most. I mean, you could have thought, you know, the dot-com bubble was a bubble in 97, but then everything, you know, goes up, you know, well over 100% from there, and crashes down down, you know, a ton after that, but it could have still been up more during the crash than when you had bought it in. Sort of like Bitcoin. You know, if you thought, you know, Bitcoin was a bubble at $1,500 and then it goes up to 20,000 and then crashes down to six, well, it's still, you know, a whole hell of a lot higher than the initial 1,500. So it's 4x from there. And not 4x, like the 4x exchange market, but four times that. But anyways, you guys get the drift on that. But no, that's what we're doing over here. So you can contact me at tim@innovativewealth.com. You can also go to thelibertyadvisor.com where we've got, you know, a spot where you guys can schedule and you're talking directly with me. Eventually, I might be talking with an assistant, but right now we've got the scale and I'm small enough where you can actually talk directly to me with these questions, because it just breaks my heart when I see people who've been screwed by their advisors. I see people who've been sold different products, sold different types of annuities. You know, not that, and I am a fan of different types of annuities, but I see people that are sold the wrong types of ones, and it really does break my heart that oftentimes people are sold different products and they try to then meld those products into a plan, whereas you should have a plan, then take that plan to then make, then to then figure out if you need any products or what strategies. And then for people that have highly appreciated assets, we've got different trust strategies for them. So that's something that is, I think, going to be huge in the Bitcoin market eventually again. And I think it's going to be huge, you know, going forward. But for right now, you know, I think people need to protect themselves. They need to protect their portfolios. They need to protect their retirement. They need to secure themselves, their friends, their families. So even if you're already with me, you're already a client, first off, I thank you. But, you know, make sure you share this with your friends. Make sure you share this with your family members because, you know, the time to protect yourself is now. There's still time to do it. You know, granted, you wouldn't have been as good if you did it, you know, a month and a half ago, but we're not going to hold that against you. So you can head over to, I believe it's thelibertyadvisor.com/LP if you wanted to know more about some of the Bitcoin stuff of what we're doing. There's also a section on there, a whole section on crypto that hopefully will, at one point we've made a little bit better. But for now, it is pretty good. We've got 2-week courses up there. We've also got howitsrigged.com where you can go and get the ebook on how the economy is rigged, both from the inflation rate, the unemployment rate, you know, GDP, a few other metrics. And one of the metrics I forgot to actually list in that book, so I'll have to update it at some point, is something called a hedonic adjustment. And that's where you can, let's say, have an iPhone that was $800 and now you have an iPhone that's $1,000. And what the government will say is, well, actually, there's so much more tech in the $1,000 phone that the price of the phone didn't rise by 20%. It actually maybe fell by 10 because there's so many more benefits now that even though you're paying more money, it's like you're not paying more money because we're the government and that's what we say. We don't get fooled.